You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. My name is Matt, and welcome to The Come Up. On this episode, a conversation with Krista Rodriguez. I first met Krista during the Chicago out-of-town tryout for The Addams Family way back in 2009. By that point, she had already done four Broadway shows, including the original company of Spring Awakening and In the Heights. And since then, her career has continued to blossom and evolve, making countless appearances in television and film, most notably, at least for me, in Smash, and as Liza Minnelli in Ryan Murphy's Netflix series, Halston. In the midst of all that, she battled and beat breast cancer, she started an interior design business, and she continues to teach workshops and classes for aspiring performers, all of which we touch on in this conversation. This was recorded at the end of November 2022. Krista had just wrapped up her run as Cinderella in the City Center revival of Into the Woods and was in tech rehearsals for Manhattan Theater Club's production of The Collaboration. I am so thankful that we had the chance to catch up and talk about her 20 years in the business, community, identity, auditioning, Sondheim, and her take on the next generation of artists and actors. And so without further ado, here is Krista Rodriguez. Are you alive?
I'm alive. That's about what I can say.
Yeah, that's the baseline.
No, I'm slowly shedding the multiple things I was doing at one time so that I'm starting to only do one thing at a time.
Have you done double duty before?
Oh, yeah. But mostly when I was, in my 20s and not doing Sondheim.
But now you're done. You're good.
I'm done. Yeah. I left on Sunday, had a nice little send off, and we're in tech. For The Collaboration right now. I'm headed there after this.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Was Into the Woods fun? Did you enjoy your time there?
It was fun. Yeah, it was super fun. It was like such a different experience and such a challenge in a good way and such a warm group of people. And it was really nice.
Was that role ever like on your radar?
No.
Yeah, that's not what I thought.
No. Not at all. Until I saw it at City Center. Because I didn't really know the show at all. I just kind of knew Steps of the Palace, and I knew it was sort of like taken out of context. It doesn't really go anywhere.
Right.
Like if it's not the middle of her story, it doesn't really speak to anything.
Yep.
And so.
But yet everyone sings it all the time.
Right. Because it's a standalone female soprano-y comedy song, which like how many of those are there?
Yeah.
Like. Where's my other shoe from She Loves Me, is what you're getting if you're a soprano and you want to be funny. It just like didn't really resonate with me. And then when I saw the City Center version and Danae Benton, who is now doing the role back on Broadway, it was like just so grounded and lovely and strong and maternal. And I was like, oh, do I understand this woman now all of a sudden? And so then when it sort of presented itself, I was like, actually, yes, I would love to take a crack at that because I think that there's some part of myself that I could bring to this that hasn't been seen before, much like Danae's version was.
Vocally, too, I feel like was right. That out of your comfort zone?
No, it's firmly in my comfort zone. Just nobody lets me do it.
Oh, my God.
That's how I learned to sing. It's how I was trained when I came to college. I auditioned with Vanilla Ice Cream. I was soprano. I was singing all the soprano songs during college. I left college with like a book of Fiorello songs and like.
That's so wild.
High C's and like did Maria in high school and, But then from that point, it's like immediately came on. My first Broadway show was Good Vibrations, which was, pop rock music. And then Spring Awakening and then just went.
And
from
even
there.
Blue hair. I mean,
Yeah. But that's why, pulled is such a conundrum for a lot of girls.
It is a conundrum.
It's in the high place because my register is quite high. And when I auditioned for Addams Family, they didn't have pulled yet. And so I sang Vanilla Ice Cream. I sang A Little Bit of Love from Wonderful Town. I sang Leaving on a Jet Plane. I sang Rainy Days and Mondays by the Carpenters, all in the same, and Blue Hair,
in the same audition.
And Andrew Lippa was like, we're just trying to figure out what she sounds like, And then when he wrote Cold, it was like, she sounds like all of them. I mean, there's like soprano parts, and I Think I Know Why, obviously These Are the Birds. It's all like, it's all very soprano-y. So anyway, that's a long version of saying, no, I used to sing like that all the time. And now just nobody, everyone sees me as this like Beltress, but I actually am not. I'm a power mixer.
You're like, I want to mix. Let me mix.
Exactly.
Listen, and it sounded gorgeous, and you know, but it was so, again, like you said, it was surprising. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was like where your comfort zone lied.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of those Sondheim shows, like even I didn't know Into the Woods either, and I didn't know Company at all.
Yeah.
And seeing a lot of these shows, obviously now being older,
yeah,
the context changes. Like, I just have a much deeper understanding of the stories and the characters in a way that I didn't when I was younger, you know?
Completely. Yeah. Because it's almost like purposefully hard to approach.
Huh.
And you have to be willing to accept whatever lesson is coming when it comes to you. It's like, it's a waterfall of information,
yeah,
and you just grab onto something that takes. And that's why I think Into the Woods resonated with people is because it's sort of like a chorus line. I did a chorus line when I was 23, and I resonated with, you know, B.B. Benzenheimer, who I was playing,
right,
and the Maggies and the, like, you know, the new kids on the block. And then I played Morales when I was 32, and I was like, oh, I'm now Morales, maybe even more Sheila, maybe even more Gregory Gardner, frankly, you know. And like, it was so good to be able to like take Morales, who's sort of like, she's the voice of both sides. She's like, I understand this side of it and I understand this side of it, and we need to keep recommitting to what we love, you know. And that was really inspiring at that moment. But anyway, all this to say, I think Into the Woods has resonated because there's Jack, there's Little Red, there's young people. So when you're a young person in theater, you go, oh, I want to sing, you know, I want to sing I Know Things Now, or I want to sing Giants in the Sky. You don't really understand the whole arc of what the show is.
No, definitely not.
And then as you get older, you know, now you start to be like, oh, I'm the baker's wife all of a sudden.
My mom was wrecked.
A lot more of this makes sense than it did then.
And I think it's interesting hearing you talk about the Morales and the BB of it all, because, you know, you've been around. It's like, you've been working for a long time professionally.
Yeah. 20 years this year.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and in New York.
And you've seen, I mean, you've done a lot, right? You've done Broadway, you've done off-Broadway, you've done tours, you've done network television, you've done network pilots, you've done streaming television. Like, you've really seen.
I started doing podcast radio plays over the pandemic.
Of course. Well, that's the new thing.
Every medium.
But so I'm curious, like, what's your perspective on all of that? You know, like, are you enjoying all of it equally? Are you feeling like, you know, theater is sort of where your heart lies? Like, what's your perspective on just the industry as a whole? How has it changed since when you started?
Yeah, I definitely, when I came to New York, it was theater or bust. I wouldn't even go on a TV audition.
Whoa.
I didn't go on a TV audition for 10 years. Because I had grown up in LA, in, like, you know, in Orange County, but I had done the whole LA trying to be a Disney star, you know, rigmarole. And I just found that the culture of television was not inclusive, and didn't have a big imagination, I guess. And I had always wanted to do theater. I went to New York and saw a Broadway show when I was 6. And from that point on,
that
thought
was
I was going to be in New York and be on Broadway.
Yeah.
But my life took a little detour in high school when it was like, well, maybe I'll do the LA thing. And when I was accepted into NYU for college, I was also accepted into UCLA. And so it was like one of these paths where it was like, what are you going to do? And I remember the moment that struck me in school. I was in physics class. And just being like, I've got to go to New York. I've always wanted to. This is the opportunity to live and be in New York and try to be on Broadway. Like, got to do it. So from that point on, I just had a bad taste in my mouth about TV. And then it wasn't until I started, you know, doing more. I had done 5 Broadway shows at that point, and I was like, okay, I see now where there is something to be gained from television, which is to watch a character grow over a long period of time.
Right.
Or frankly, to have a weekend. I mean, as much as like, it's both things. It's artistically filling and personally fulfilling sometimes, or can be in those ways. And so I went for it and I had some success in that area. And then, you know, after a while, long enough, you miss Broadway. You miss that community. You miss putting everybody, I always call it like the great equalizer. It's like you put everybody in a room and you try to put on a show, whereas I could shoot a movie and never see somebody that I,
am
in a scene with, frankly. Yeah, right. I've done scenes with people I've never met, you know? So that is like one thing about that that's sort of unsettling sometimes. So I just have been very lucky to try to go where the roles are that I relate to and whatever medium that is. And that's, like I said, why I was doing radio plays and stuff during the pandemic, because Teresa Rebeck wrote them. And I love being a Teresa Rebeck character, you know?
Yeah.
She writes the best, most complicated women that I love playing. And so I think I just like now the sort of North Star is just, do I love this role? Do I think that it could do it? And do I miss one of these things or another? You know, and it had been 7 years since I'd been on Broadway when I came back to do Woods. So I had done off Broadway.
Right. I saw you Seared. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And I did Hercules and I did my show at 54 Below. But as far as like Broadway had been
eight times
the
a week,
of
like
spring. Yeah. And so it was, I remember kind of walking down the street one day and being like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to go back to Broadway. Because when you're in it, you know how hard it is and you know you can't dedicate yourself to it unless you're obsessed with it. Like it has to be,
it has to be
a thing you know you have to play.
Yeah.
It has to be a thing you know you're going to, you know, give up things for. So that's what I decided to do. And then two showed up at the same time and now here I am.
What a freaking blessing too.
Yeah.
What was your expectation of what Broadway would be like versus sort of the reality of it? Like I'm always curious to hear about that contrast and sort of when that came.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, immediately, like when I came to New York again when I was 13 and I saw a bunch of shows, and I remember I saw the Scarlet Pimpernel. And Christine Andres was coming out of the stage door and she was signing autographs. And I was just so amazed to meet her. And then I will never forget like her putting on her hat through like the Minskoff Alley and walking up to Times Square and disappearing.
Just another
and
person.
I was like, That's what I want. I want to do what I love. I want to be important to the people who saw it, who know. Mm. I want them to be appreciative of me because of my work. And then I want to leave and go home and have nobody care. And for some reason, even at 13, that felt very appealing to me. Mm. And so I knew already that it wasn't going to be like, you know,
glitz and glamour. Yeah,
and
yeah,
glamorous.
Yeah. Right.
But I think the expectation and, you know, in a weird way, I did children's theater and then I did Broadway. I had never done a community theater production. I had done one college production, you know, but I left
very little in between.
Very little in between. So it really was a very shocking experience to be like, oh, this isn't really different.
Mm.
It just has more money and more stakes. But also my first Broadway show was Good Vibrations, which was a huge flop. So where you go from even in your high school or your children's theater feeling so fulfilled by playing, you know, Mama Rose or something, like you're getting to play roles you would never get
right,
to play
yeah, yeah.
in real life and trying to and having that like, experience of this is the best thing I've ever been in. And I remember even being at the audition of Good Vibrations and going, I don't think this is good, but it's Broadway. So it's got maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like this is good. And then you're in it going, oh, so not everything has to be good. Oh, I almost was more fulfilled doing my children's theater than I am being on Broadway if it's not the right project. And so that's when you really start to like hone in on, oh, so it really is about the project, the people, the team, the, you know, the vision. It's not just about being on Broadway. That's not the destination, actually. The roles and the artistry is the destination.
I think it's really helpful. Two things. Helpful, one, that you were in a flop first.
Yes.
Like,
so helpful.
I think that's like really, really helpful for the longevity of you and your career.
Yeah.
And I think the sort of low bar expectation of it not being this, because I think a lot of times young people have this sense that, like, when I book X, Y, or Z,
yes,
I will be happy, or yeah, I'll have my life set and I'll be good to go and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
All my problems will be solved. And I know that's not the case for you. I mean, I know that there's been things that have happened in the course of your career that have been out of your control, separate from theater and entertainment.
Of course. Yeah.
That I think, I don't know, it's just, it's always nice to hear, and helpful, I think, to hear that, like, it, those expectations are not, that's not reality.
Right.
And
I try to be very honest. I teach a lot. I try to be honest with that, about with students and stuff, that this isn't the, like, you have one weekend of the show and you all cry at the cast party. Like, this is,
that's some high school shit.
This is your,
yeah,
life forever. This is your, it's the same as your parents' job. It's the same as,
it's a job.
You know, it's a job. It's your work. And, you know, I heard a quote from Lucy Prebble, who wrote Enron, mm-hmm, and also produces and writes for Succession now, and, like, an incredible playwright. But she was, like, you know, working at a coffee shop or something and wrote this hit play, and then had to go back to the coffee shop and then wrote another hit play, and finally got to be like, okay, I'm ready to be a full-time writer. Yeah. And they were like, oh my God, isn't this your dream? Like, you got to quit your coffee shop job and whatever. And apparently she said, yeah, but I married my mistress. It's, ooh, like, all of a sudden you have to now wake up to this face every day that was sort of your, like, secret little passion, mm-hmm, and your thing that could, like, take you away from your life. Is how we feel when we're meeting our community as children. If you encounter the arts early on, it's like, these are my people. This is my escape from being bullied. This is, yeah, my escape from the world. This is where I find my true passion, and that it's, and my value is worth something, you know? And so then to then be like, oh, and also you have to do it to eat is a bit of a, you know, a shock. And that's why I'm very supportive of people. When, even if they're, I went to an arts high school, and I really believe that that education is invaluable no matter what you do. And it's almost better sometimes. It's like, go do a job that is steady, and you can have, you know, a family life that, you know, and live wherever you want, and do community theater, and do, and make YouTube videos, and make, you know, yeah, do a web series. Like, you can do all that stuff without making it your primary job, and it can be just as fulfilling. And that is something that, you know, I love that this is my job. I'm not, you know, but I also am encouraging of people who it might not be for them, and that is okay. It's not a failure. It's an understanding of the job you're getting into.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of times I've found since, I mean, it's been almost 10 years since I've been out of school, but a lot of the people that I graduated with, it takes time to sort of find where you fall in the, yeah, in the industry, and,
yeah,
and it certainly takes time to find acceptance for wherever you fall as well. And that's like a process of being like, oh, okay, not here, but here. So how, yeah, do I make this either fulfilling, or do I find things outside of this thing that I can sustain myself so that I can maintain this? And even, yeah, people that I know, I mean, I'm sure you know too, like, people that are in Broadway shows doing 8 shows a week are still having side hustles. Like,
oh, sure,
are still,
oh,
doing some other thing, because they're like, this.
If you're working at an off-Broadway, a non-for-profit,
oh, I mean,
that's not a living wage.
Right.
It's just not.
Yeah.
So I've worked with many people in shows that I have done that weren't production contracts, who are still doing jobs, full-time jobs during the day,
yeah,
and doing the shows at night.
And side hustles. I mean, that's the other thing, yeah, too, is like, I know you were doing that interior design thing for,
okay,
for a moment.
Okay.
And I
still am. But it's hard to juggle both.
When you're doing two shows.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
But I think those kinds of things are important to have, like,
yeah,
outside of, again, like, this is your job.
But it takes you a while to be able to have the time and the wherewithal to even have a side hustle or a side passion. It's like, you have poor, people always would ask me, like, what my hobbies are. I'm like, I don't have hobbies. I sing, I dance, I act. Like,
that's my hobby.
I dedicated my entire life to three full disciplines. I don't have hobbies.
That's it. Listen, you're lucky that you get to, like,
Netflix.
Use that. Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I, like, go to sleep watching television and go, I turn around and do it again. Like, you know, so it takes a while to where you can like really have mastery of what you're doing to then be like, okay, now I need an outlet for this other part of my brain that isn't maybe necessarily getting as stimulated as it was before.
And I think that's important. I just think that's like useful and important for people to hear. I know also you have formed in the time that you've been here really a really strong like bedrock of a community. Like you have people that are your like ride or dies.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to know about how that has affected you, how it's been helpful, what's been hard, et cetera, in the process. Because I think community building is something that I, again, when I like teach or talk to people, it's like the thing I'm like, you got to have peeps.
You got to. I know people always want to know their advice about, you know, like they want to know like how to get to Broadway. They think I'm going to like open my coat and give them the key if they say the right word. And I'm always like, get a good therapist. And they're like, ha, 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 ha. I'm like, no. Get a good therapist now.
Start.
Because that your mental health is the most important thing. And like it has never been prioritized as much as it is now. And people, you know, it's time to be, you know, integrating that and not being solely focused on whatever the career is.
Yeah.
And I learned that, you know, as time went on. And I think I'm so lucky to have the group that I have, and that has been, you know, forged through fire. You go through these experiences together, and even, you know, I can't say that I'm close to really most people that I did that Good Vibration show with, but if I see them on the street,
you're like, oh,
we went through something.
Yeah, right.
They will always be my family in that way. So you know, you just sort of, that's almost the hardest part, is that you have to form these super intimate bonds very quickly, and they become your family, and then they leave. And that's why you go through a mourning period sometimes when you leave a show. You're like, you're mourning losing an entire family unit, and you go to the next family unit and hope you can find somebody there, you know? So I've been very lucky. And sometimes you, like with the second cast of Spring Awakening, that's where I really found like the people who that continued to stay with me beyond the show. And I'm very grateful for that. Yeah. But it's very important to find, like I said, a good therapist, and also to find the people who you trust to reflect back to you what's going on, because you're going to hear all kinds of things, especially now with social media. You're going to hear you're a piece of trash. You're going to hear you're the greatest thing that ever existed, and you're not going to know which way is up. And so when you can find the people who you say, okay, I'm going to put my trust in you to reflect to me. Am I the problem here? Do I need to keep, you know, should I ignore this? Should I let this in? And that's been, that's as important as having, you know, good mental health, is having your bedrock of people who will, like, you know, give you the real truth.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and again, I mean, the therapist thing is so fucking big. I like cannot emphasize that enough.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Wow. what have been like the harder periods for you? You know, what have been like, what are some, I'm just curious, like, you know, what are the things that you've struggled with the most in this 20 year career, as you said before?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I have struggled with the most is, how do I want to put this? The sort of lack of ability to believe anything at face value. That's been a really difficult thing to learn, which is, you know, even like I stopped asking for feedback from auditions because like, then you're just grasping for like a reason why you didn't get it. And frankly, there is no reason. That, like, maybe there is. If you walked in there and you were an ass, or, you know, you got, you know, you weren't prepared, that's feedback that's important. But to be like, you know, she's just, she just has a quality about, it's like, I can't, I don't want to hear that. You know, either I'm it or I'm not it. And that's the most important thing. So, but why that can be damaging is because it's a casting director maybe telling you why they think maybe you didn't get the thing, where it could be that like the director didn't have lunch yet and he just, it just didn't hit at that point. Yeah. Or he got a phone call right before that didn't, you know. And so now you're placing a value judgment on, you know, this quality that you have when it really wasn't about that. So you start to have to kind of divorce yourself from what people are telling you. But then it's also like, yeah. I mean, this is very, this is all inside baseball, which is fine, you know, for this. So forgive me if people, you know, don't really relate, but it's like, you know, how it was between me and one other girl. It's like, it's never between you and one other girl. Right. There's 100 girls who they could just call up in a second. And so the things that you're being told are not true. And even the times when you're like, you're amazing, no, we love you, it's great, you're getting fired the next day.
Right.
So it's like, it's been very difficult to sort of know where the real truth lies sometimes. And people will like, you know, you might get a note from a director and you're like, why am I getting this note? And it's because a producer told the usher to tell the doorman to tell, you know, the director that this is, you know, and it's, and so you're like, oh my God, I'm terrible, I'm bad. Mm-hmm. And it's really the director being like, I've got this, everyone has a boss. Everyone's answering to somebody else.
Yep.
And you think you are the problem all the time. I think I'm the problem all the time. And so I never trust anybody, even when they're saying it's good, because that's so the lack of trust in what people are telling you to your face.
Yeah.
And we all know this. Like, I don't go backstage if I see a show that I don't like and go, woof, that was terrible. There's something good to say about it, because I know how hard it is to put something up. To make anything even mediocre is
hard.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Let alone something good, let alone something great. And so I, you know, and just because you do something that's not great, you don't deserve the death penalty. You know, it's like, okay, you tried and it didn't work, but I'm going to give you something that I liked about it. But if I'm at home with my friends, I'm going to say, I really didn't like this thing and this, oh, I hated that choice from the this perspective or whatever, or this part really bothered me, or I loved this or whatever. And knowing that that's going to happen to you, someone's going to tell you your show is amazing and go home. Say, she didn't sound that great on that thing. And knowing that that's part of it and it's okay, it doesn't really reflect on you. Or if it does, like, you know, so what? You missed. You swung and you missed, but you swung, you know? And that's been a really tricky thing to find. And as you get older and more settled in yourself, you have to kind of decide if this is what the path you're going to take, or are you going to be miserable forever? And
you get to choose.
You get to choose. And sometimes I choose the other. And sometimes I choose, you know.
Day to day, hour to hour.
Day to day. Yeah. So that's been that I would say that's been the hardest part of growing in this industry.
Yeah.
Is the more you see, the more you know how it works, the harder it is to trust how the system is working.
Especially at the level that you're working at, right? When we're talking Broadway, network television, pilots, streamer, like that, there's so many cooks in the kitchen. There's so much involved behind the scenes that has nothing to do with the actors.
No.
That, yeah, I you know, I...
And even if it did have to do with the actors, they wouldn't tell you. So you just have to be like, well, I'm going to either accept this at face value, or if my inkling is that I am maybe part of the problem, maybe investigate that. And, you know, it can't always be not me, you know?
Right. But it can't always be
you. It can't always be me.
Right. Yeah. And I think that skill is obviously useful, you know, across the board in like not taking things personally, right? Yeah. Like, and I'm coming from both ends of saying, oh, this person thought that the show was bad, so that's not about me. Or even in an audition when you don't get it, it's like, okay, that actually has nothing to do with me. The phone call came in, he had to go to the bathroom, like whatever it is.
Totally.
And the other end of going, when someone's like, you're amazing, you're the best thing since sliced fucking bread, it's hard to be like, thank you, but not let that like blow you
right?
up.
But also to know that because maybe he got a good news phone call and you came in and you said the one line right that he's been wanting to hear. And so now you've got the job.
Yeah.
And I've gone through that and still gotten on set and been fired because you don't say all the other lines the way that they want you to say. It's like, you know, you can never really, you can't, that's why I stopped reading reviews years ago. First of things that I was in and then subsequently of anything because.
None now. None.
Never. Because I realized that it was coloring my experience of things I hadn't even seen. It was telling me whether or not to support an art form that I'm obsessed with and have dedicated my life to. And also, frankly, you know, when you get that, when you see that really mean one and you get that little like, ooh, that's bad. I don't want that feeling either. I was participating in the culture of meanness around a group of people who are underpaid, undervalued, and working
their
solely
fucking
for
asses
people's
off.
Entertainment and our fulfillment, you know, and like, why am I excited when some idiot writes something mean about it?
Yeah.
So I just was like, I don't want to participate in that at all. And I want to make my own opinions. And because you can't be like, you know what? This person really knows what they're talking about when they said I was amazing.
Well, it's one person's opinion.
Yeah. Also, though, if they say you're amazing, you're like, why didn't you say resplendent? Why didn't you point out the exact moment that I've been wanting the attention for? It's never enough. And it's always too much. And it's like, what are we doing?
Right.
Here?
One is never enough. And 1,000 is too many. Right. There's no in between. But that's like, I mean, that's, again, part of life. Like that's a
and
universal
most of us
lesson.
Are the type of people who I had a teacher tell me this one time. So she's like, you could be at Carnegie Hall in a standing ovation and look at the one person with their arms crossed and be like, tell me why I'm the worst.
Yeah.
You know, I need to know why you don't like me. I don't care that.
I know. What is that? What is that about artists?
But I need you to like me.
What is that about us that we, it's like, it's just, we're never satisfied. You know, we're like always craving that kind of validation.
I do think that there is like, I have always thought it's like a mental, like, there's a chip in our brains. You don't get into this if there isn't a chip in your brain.
Oh, certainly.
That lets you do this.
No. And I think it's important to say also something that I've not recently acknowledged, but I get reminded of every season is I'm like, man, I'm fucking obsessed with this form. Like, I love it. And no matter if I see something that I don't like, I'm still going to get teary during bows because I'm like, man, they fucking worked their asses off. They did that.
Yeah.
And it's never fun to see someone fail. It's never fun, you know, to read a bad review and go, damn, all those people are working so hard.
Well, the thing about the art form of theater is that it's live and in person. And so you can't extract the humans from that experience. If you're watching a movie or a TV, you can almost think these aren't real people. But when you extract the humanity from people in theater, you know, it's the same as the director getting that phone call. Somebody's parent is dying while they're up there performing a tap dance. You know, like these are humans putting on a show. And that's why you came. And that's why you paid a premium is to watch real humans
do something real,
do something in front of you. Sleight of hand magic in front of you.
Yeah.
And if you don't respect that the humans are the ones making it. And that's also not to clarify, I also think we should extend that to film and television. But what I'm saying is like, especially if you are going to honor this art form, you have to honor the people who are doing it.
I think that's very well said. How you show up in a room is it different than when you started? And let me give you context for this. I'm finding now that I can show up. I want to show up as myself because if I don't and I get it, then there's an expectation on me of like who I'm going to be in the rehearsal room, who is not actually me. That's not really my real self.
Yeah. Yeah. I say this a lot. I mean, like, you know, I've done shows for years. And so when you're coming into the room, you also have to be somebody who they're not just looking for whether you can do it. They're looking for whether they want to spend years with you.
Right.
And you also get to decide if you want to spend years with them.
Uh-huh.
Because you're going to have to dedicate a lot of time and sacrifice a lot for whenever it is. So, you know, it's an interview as much as it is like a showing of what I have prepared for this.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's part of the growing up in the business, or at least growing up knowing you want to be in the business. It's intrinsically linked with discipline and adults telling children or young adults what to do and how to behave. So a lot of it is you have to look a certain way. You have to be poised. You have to stand a certain way. You have to say, thank you very much. Hello, my name is Chris Rodriguez and I will be singing with perfect diction. And like at that point, I mean, maybe if you're starting out, you still need a bit of that poise, but I've been on the other side of the table and I don't want that poise. It's not sustainable.
Right.
I don't know who you are. I don't know how I'm going to want to interact with you. I don't know how. And in the quest to be, you know, perfect and like give only what you prepared, what happens when a direction gets thrown at you in the room?
Oh, yeah. Well, that shit's.
And
yeah.
I mean, if I'm behind the table, a surefire way for you not to get the job is for you to do it the same way after I gave you a note,
mm-hmm.
because it's the way you performed it, prepared it, or the way that you feel like, but if I sing it this way, I'm going to sound bad. It's like, I might be wrong about my note, but I need to know if you're willing to play ball.
Yeah.
You know? Because we're going to be trying a lot of things. Things could be cut. Everything could change, you know? Your role could go from one end of a spectrum to another, and you have to be malleable. So I think coming in as a more empty, open vessel as a human, and then acknowledging like, hey, I'm a human, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to see this, if this thing works, and you'll let me know if that did it for you or not. Like I left an audition recently that I really wanted. And I left the room and I said, I did what I wanted to do. Now it's up to them to whether they want that.
Which is honestly the best kind of place to be in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I didn't get it. So, you know, and I could feel it in the room that they weren't wanting that version of it. And like, you know what? They'll find the version they want. I don't need to contort myself to be the version they need me to be for
But that's
someone else
huge.
Gets to do it.
But that's huge to know, to be like, I'm not going to fit my square peg into a round hole. Like, I don't need to mold myself to be something that I'm not.
Yeah. And that's like a thing they start to dismantle in college a little bit, but you can't really know until you get in there that it's just like you have to be yourself. You have to find yourself quickly in this and then just let that fly. And that's not to say you can't stretch yourself if you don't think you normally do these things. Be open to that. But also know, like, sometimes I sit in a waiting room. I mean, there's no waiting rooms anymore, but I used to sit in waiting rooms and be like,
yeah, remember that?
If this is yours, I want this for you. Like, I would give the role to everyone in the waiting room because that's just, you know, it's just a healthier thing to be. And there's so many times I read scripts and I'm like, so-and-so would be so much better for this. Like, mm-hmm. If someone else pops into my mind when I'm auditioning for something, chances are it's not my part. You know?
And you're not the only one whose mind it popped into.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
also
yeah.
like, yeah. So if I know that person, I'm usually sending a text being like, you're going in for such and such, right? Yeah.
You said you teach a lot. Are you finding that the generation that you're working with is different from the teens and 20s that you were around when you started in the business? Like, what has shifted or what's different?
I think, I mean, this, I have no metrics to base this on. This is anecdotal.
100%.
I think people are more talented.
Huh.
I think that, like, I think because of things like American Idol, and so you think you can dance, and Glee, being a performer became something that was more valued, or you felt like there was a path with it more than maybe you did before. And people started training sooner, and people started, like,
training harder,
realizing, training harder. And also, like, I believe the younger generation has the benefit of seeing much more realistic acting, much more, like, earnest and honest and messy and complicated roles. So you can be more honest and messy and complicated as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has led to, like, some really incredible performances from younger people in a way that I always learn. I mean, I teach at this place called the Performing Arts Project, and why I love it so much is part of your audition is a song, a monologue, and then an original something. It could be,
whoa,
you could come with cupcakes, like you baked cupcakes. It could be, I wrote a song. It could be somebody once did a dramatic monologue of their diary from when they were in third grade. Like, you know, like any, like all kinds of, these are my doodles that I do in science class. And you're just like, the creativity and the emotional capacity of this generation, I think is really, it's the most exciting part for me.
Yeah, it's certainly a different time, you know. Something that I've talked to a lot of people about is the fact that, like, even, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, we didn't have an alphabet. You know, the belting is higher. That makes people train. It's like a swimmer. You know, that's why swimming times are getting faster in every Olympics, because people are like, I gotta push, I gotta push, I gotta push, I gotta push.
Exactly.
And granted, I'm not saying that, like, that is what we're, that's not the goal, that's not what we're going for. But even that has changed in this sort of sense of what people are wanting or what people want to be doing.
Exactly.
But I think you're right in the sense that this is a much more feasible, quote unquote, career path.
We're also, like, in a unique time of higher education. Almost everybody, you know, is, when I was deciding about school, I auditioned for 4 schools. I maybe wasn't going to go to college.
I auditioned for 13 schools. Like,
yeah, now they're like 24, because you have to go to school, which means now programs, especially arts programs all around the country, are as prestigious as it was once, like Juilliard, you know, Carnegie Mellon, and then NYU.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, and then Michigan, and then now it's Texas. Now it's
Texas.
You know, it's everywhere. Yeah. You can get a great program because more people are infiltrating it wasn't a big deal to have a college education when I was now it's what school did you go to? Where'd you graduate from? And so there has been more of a value placed on, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, but I'm just saying there's been more of a value placed on getting into a program. So people are more trained by the time they get into their jobs.
I was so untrained when I got to school. Like, it was.
I went to an arts high school, so I was already sort of ahead of the game, but there were certainly people who had, like, sung once in a school talent show and now are at NYU.
That's
trying
crazy.
To, like, learn everything.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And there should be room for that. I just think now, because more people are going to school, these programs are getting more intense and more competitive and, you know.
And I think it's more important than ever to look at the school as a whole, and obviously the program as a whole, and figure out where if that's something you want to be doing and where you're going to fit in, because the people that went to, like, my fiance went to Michigan and loved the culture of Michigan, right?
Yeah.
The football games and the college experience, you know.
Right.
I went to a conservatory. I went to BOCO. Like,
I don't want a college experience.
Right. Or at least when I was 18, I didn't. And I can certainly look back and I have feelings about all that. But I think it's really important at 18 to be like, wait, what do I want right now? Like, what's important to me?
And also, like, I would advocate for you don't, I'm not advocating for not higher education, but just like the education cost is so exorbitant.
Oh my God.
I want things to return to a more vocational, you know, focus, like that it's not just an indiscriminate, you must spend $100,000+ on your education in order to be valuable. I don't think that that's true.
And there are
either.
People that are good enough that like they don't really need, I mean, you know, you could certainly get, you're certainly gaining something from going to school and getting education, but there are people that I'm like, you start auditioning, you know, and everything's on tape now. So it's like, you don't really even need to be here necessarily to be to be going in for things.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What are you reading any books right now? Are you watching? Like, what are you watching? What are you listening to? What are things you're interested in?
Well, I've now been able to like fully immerse in the world of the collaboration. So I'm reading a book called Widow Basquiat, which is about one of Basquiat's girlfriends who that's what I play in the show, and sort of her love affair with Jean-Michel Basquiat. And that's been great. And I'm sort of like, diet method on this. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
But I'm only in about 12 pages of the whole show.
Kind of nice.
Yeah, I know. Very different than Cinderella. And when I got the role, I was like, my worst nightmare would be me scrolling on Instagram in my dressing room until I come down and do this scene.
Eek.
And, you know, I have a passion for interior design. When I was at Woods, I wallpapered the whole room. I like made a full like cottage den up there. And so my surroundings are always, I'm always very affected by my surroundings. So I'm going to design my room as sort of Maya's, my character's Maya's house, her apartment. And the dream would be, and I'm working on the logistics of this, would be to lock my phone up when I enter into the dressing room. The show is less than 2 hours. It's okay.
Yeah.
I have a record player in there. I will have like a tape deck, a Walkman, books, magazines from the 80s. And I want to just like sit in that world and leave my apartment and go down and visit Jean in his apartment and then come back up and go back to my apartment and see if that, how that affects, you know, what it's like. I've never really had the ability to do that, nor the kind of desire or the idea, not the desire, but the idea that it could be really beneficial.
Yeah.
But this feels like it's such a realistic version of life with real people that I want to see what that's like.
How deep was your knowledge on them?
I mean, I knew a lot about Warhol in my Liza sort of research. So I knew about 60s, 70s Warhol and sort of less about 80s Warhol, but I did read the Warhol diaries. So I know a lot about like, you know, the inner workings of his artistry and his life. I knew very little about Basquiat as far as who he was as a person. I knew the artwork, and I knew less about their collaboration, about the artwork that they did together. I sort of knew that they did it there's iconic posters of them in their boxing gloves, right. And they are part of the pop art trio of that era. So I knew they were linked, but didn't know what the works were like and what the origin of how they came about. So so it's been really fun to learn about that. And these actors, Paul Bettany, Warhol, and Jeremy Pope, who's Basquiat, are just fucking dynamos. Like, it's so right now I'm so jealous that I get to sit in. I mean, I'm so grateful I get to sit in the audience, and I'm so jealous of the audience when I can't be down there anymore.
Because it's, I'm sure. I mean, I can imagine.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're lovely people. And it's just been a really lovely, very communal experience, which, you know, it's hard to find in COVID Broadway. Mm-hmm. So,
Do you like the piece?
I do. I think it's going to surprise people because it starts as a bit, and without giving anything away, like it starts a bit as like musings about art and these two very different people coming into a place. And will they or won't they? It's a very, like, it's a love story. It's a romantic comedy in a weird way between these two people. And it's like, can they work together? Can they make their differences work? And while they're kind of in one place, the world is around them outside. They're speaking about the world outside. And what I love about my character is I don't come in until the second act, really. And by the time I enter the scene, the world is now in the play. And rather than it being philosophical and about art and what artistry means and who these people are, all of a sudden that's going to have to be put to the test in real life situations when life comes through the door. And then when you think you're watching like kind of a pastiche piece about art and icons, you watch them have to deal with a situation together and it becomes a different play, which is really cool.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's and I imagine fun for you to do something.
Yeah,
not
it's wild. It's very different. I mean, I whirlwind in and I whirlwind out, and we're in tech now, and I teched the scene yesterday, and even in tech, I went, oh, that goes by so fast. I mean, it
just happens.
It's like 6 minutes and it's done, and you're like, whoa, what just occurred? Did I do anything? I don't even know.
something happened.
Yeah,
and I came and I went.
Fast. Yeah.
How is, you know, doing something like this or doing even Into the Woods or really any of it, like, how is it defined or affected your like self identity, like your sort of understanding of yourself?
You know, it's interesting. What made me think of this is like, I had a lot of people who came to see Woods who, you know, all of us actually, when we went in, because a bunch of us went in at the same time, the comments we were getting afterwards were like, I've never heard that line before. Rather than like, you were so great in this part. You were a great Cinderella. You were a great baker. You were a great blah, blah, blah. I never heard this part before. And you know, you want the like, you were the best person, but you're like, but the compliment you get from Sondheim specifically is like, I keyed in on something that I didn't know. And I was sort of, we were talking about it and we were maybe feeling a little like, are we doing a good job?
Salty.
Like,
yeah.
You know, self-conscious about it. And somebody said, you know, the thing about your Cinderella, rather than looking at it and going, I've never seen, it's hard to explain. It's like, rather than looking at it and seeing like, oh my gosh, like you making a value judgment on how my Cinderella is, it's that I allowed what I do to be Cinderella rather than I wasn't playing Cinderella well. I allowed Cinderella to expand. And that was something that I had never really thought about. Is like that whatever I bring to this is the unique thing. It's not a reflection on me. It's a reflection of how I was able to expand a character and what I bring to fill the container of the character. And like,
oh, that's interesting.
even with this collaboration, they already did the show. So I'm new to it. Someone else has already played this role. And they brought in the costumes from that version of the thing. And I was like, who's that girl? Like, whoa, not the thing I was creating. And I said, it was such a lesson in going, you know, I read this thing and I go, this is how it should be done. And I get insecure about, like, am I doing enough? And it's like, actually, I think because anyone would read this and do it this way. But no, somebody else read it and did it a completely different way. Mm-hmm. And rather than wondering how I'm coming across, how can I fill the walls of this character with what is innately in me
in
and
you.
The way I approach text and the way I approach movement and the way I approach, you know, analysis of a character.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just became a different framework with both of these roles that I stepping into things that people have already done, which I don't normally do, and realizing that that's like an interesting framework.
Right. Of like, it's interesting because what I thought you were going to say was allowing a character to sort of like you being the vessel for the character to come through.
Yes, that is also true. It's like we all agreed that we were like the highest compliment you can get in a Sondheim show that everybody knows and everyone grew up with is that they heard something differently.
Oh my God,
we're serving
right.
the piece. You know,
yeah.
we are a communal experience giving you a whole thing rather than needing to be a standout, and that's like way better because it just is such a better experience.
But I also love the sort of idea of the character existing as an entity,
yeah,
and then you having to like fill it with
yeah.
your own-ness,
yes.
you know, your you-ness,
exactly,
as it were,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's, and it's interesting that you haven't felt that. Even with something like Chorus Line before, like that hadn't sort of come.
I mean, BB was kind of a smaller thing. And then by the time I did Morales, I just, there's just people who, I think what it is that there are roles you just think like, this is me. But when you're going into Cinderella, who is not, maybe you don't know is you,
right.
when you realize it is you, what people are seeing is what you bring to that, not you as that. It's like they're seeing a new Cinderella. They're not seeing a new Krista Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's a better compliment to me, is to see a new Cinderella, a new version of Cinderella, than, wow, you're doing something we've never seen you do before. It's like watching Cinderella do something she's never done before.
Yeah.
And that is a cooler way to think about it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I think like a higher compliment even, you know? Post-pandemic, how are you feeling about working? What's changed?
It's not post-pandemic on Broadway.
Right.
And some things, you know, need to adjust in that way. It's a very different world there. It's in it, and the onus is very much on the actors to remain safe in a world that has given up on trying to do that. And so it's an added layer of stress and mental health, as a mental health hit that, you know, we frankly don't need. So we don't need another mental health
another thing, right? Yeah, right.
Around
right.
this, you know, thing. So, the whole dynamic has changed. There's not a community really anymore.
In the same way, right?
Yeah. Until because we had to push a preview back because we have somebody with COVID who's feels fine and is testing negative, but is not allowed back in the building, you know?
Yeah.
So it's affecting our jobs and it's affecting our work and our ability to make a living. And it's not really affecting anybody else in that way.
Yeah.
When you step into a Broadway theater behind the proscenium, it is, you know, it's August of 2020.
And which is so wild.
Yeah. I would love for us to become a post-pandemic art form somehow. I don't know the way around that. I don't know the way through that, but the joys of being in theater are the blood, sweat, and tears, and we can't share that with each other or with anybody anymore. There are people that I've worked with at Woods who I've never seen their face. You know, there are crew people I never got to see their whole face.
Whoa. Like, yeah, right. You're like, what's your mouth look like?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Not until my last performance did I go, oh, that's what you look like when we went, you know, the first time we ever went outside the building together because you're so terrified of getting COVID and giving it to people and all of that. So,
well, and you don't want to, and you want to work. Like, you're like, I don't want to be out of the show.
Oh, no, you don't. We've been trained to never miss a show. And now we're being forced to miss at least 14. If you're out for 10 days, you miss 14 shows. So that's an incredible amount of time. Most people, unless you were severely injured, would never be out of a show that long.
Right. They'd be like, I'll figure it out.
Bronchitis, you got a Z-Pack and a steroid shot, you're back in the show.
You're good.
Because you don't make money if you're not performing. You don't get paid if you don't perform.
Yeah.
And now we're being, I have never missed 14 performances of show ever. And I hope I won't have to.
Yeah, but I was going to say, knock on wood. Anyway. Thanks for this. This has been so, so lovely. And I'm so excited for you. Just, it's all good. And, I'm happy to hear and see that your spirit is open and lifted and that you're feeling heading into the holidays and this very cold winter.
Yes. Always warmth. Every year it surprises me.
I know. And it doesn't change. It's always cold.
It's always cold. Yep.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.